Hello, Brian. How are you?
Morning, guys.
What can you tell us about St. Louis? When I say St. Louis or the Blues, what's the first thing that pops into your mind?
I thought they would be the most improved team in the West. I thought they made more positive change even than Calgary did. And I thought that, you know, they're stumbling out of the gate a bit here, but I thought they added more pieces that would make them better. They've been a playoff team, you know, pretty well for every year, but they're kind of the Washington Capitals. They play really well but can't advance. And I think they had enough of that, so they made some big changes and hasn't borne any fruit yet, but I still think they're going to be a playoff team.
The Capitals had Braden Holtby. Is Allen good enough to do what Holtby did for the Caps?
I don't know, but Holtby didn't even start the playoffs, remember? Grubauer did, so I don't know if he's good enough or not. Certainly, I would say his body of work reflects that he's capable of playing at an elite level for a prolonged period of time. But he has some hard stretches, too.
We were talking this morning about all these changes that St. Louis has made. Berglund, Sobotka, Tage Thompson, Stastny, Brodziak, Upshaw, like it's a long list of guys. And then you kind of take a step back and, well, how many of those guys are irreplaceable? And how many of those guys are part of the reason why they haven't been making the playoffs? And that's probably the answer. They bring in some young guys, and they go and get some guys in free agency, and, of course, the big trade for O'Reilly.
Yeah, and I think Ryan O'Reilly's a hell of a hockey player. I thought that was a good move. They're going to regret putting Tage Thompson in that deal because he's going to be a really good player. But you got to pay to get things. And no GM's giving things away. So I thought that was a good pickup. Really, on paper, as I sat and watched free agency in the summer and watched the trades, looking at the rosters, updating my book. So now you work, you know, just it's no different than a team. You work for a Sportsnet, and you've got your own book, and trades are made. You record where the player went, and you're looking at all the change in St. Louis, and you're like, they made the most positive change of any team in the West, in my mind. Still doesn't make them a contender, necessarily. But I think they're going to have a good year, and I think they'll miss Thompson, but again, you got to pay. To get good players, you got to pay good players.
Were you there when Pronger got moved to St. Louis? Like, were you in Hartford when the...
No.
Okay, I didn't think so, because I remember talking to you last week. And
hey, you can pin some bad trades on me, and I'll happily take... I've made some really bad trades, but do not ever suggest that I would have traded Chris Pronger.
You traded for him twice, just not traded him away.
No, I drafted him in 93. So right. That was the end of my first year in Hartford. We had the sixth pick in the draft, and I moved up to two and drafted him. And you all remember who was drafted first overall, right? Alexander Daigh.
Yeah, that's right.
And Chris Pronger went second. We sweated that out because we were passing on Paul Kariya. I talked to Red about this. The big nightmare was, Jesus, Murphy, we're passing on Paul Kariya. But we loved Pronger. You know, our scouting staff... Kenny Schenkel and Bruce Harrelson, me, Tommy Rowe, we're all like, we got to get this kid. He's going to be a star. So we traded up to two. And Sergei Makarov was in that deal. I got the intelligence on that deal from San Jose standpoint was very poor. We knew they wanted to draft Kozlov and bring in Makarov to kind of mentor him. So we went and got Makarov. So he was Sergei Makarov, look it up. He was the Hartford Whaler for about 6 weeks. Never played a game.
All right, so no trading of Pronger.
No, hey. No.
Can you tell the story? And it just kind of makes me chuckle when you made the deal with Edmonton to get Pronger to Anaheim, and you told Lucas Sabiza that he was going to Edmonton in the Pronger deal.
I never had Lucas Sabiza.
Well, what was it? I'm trying. Or
Buddy Smead.
Thank you. Look, not yeah, Luke. Laddie Schmid. Sorry, thank you.
So we made the deal, and I called Laddie. He was back home in the Czech Republic, and he was in a restaurant or something. And it was very noisy. I said, Laddie, you got to move somewhere where you can hear me because this is important. And Laddie Schmid is a great kid, not a good kid, a great kid. So he steps out in the vestibule of this restaurant, and I said, look, you just been traded. And he said, oh, where? I said, Edmonton. He says, oh, good hockey town. Okay. And he said, for who? And I said, for Chris Pronger. And I started to go through the trade. And he stops. He holds the phone out with his arms wide and yells to the whole restaurant, I just got traded for Chris Pronger. I'm like, wait, there's more. There's other pieces.
It's not just not one for one, laddie.
Yeah, no, hang on, laddie. Turn on.
That was
awesome.
Yeah, you're a smaller piece of this deal, but you'll enjoy Edmonton.
So it was two firsts. It was first and Joffrey Lupo and Laddie Smead. And then Kevin said to me, he said, I think I'm punching your ticket to the finals if I make this deal. I said, you're right. So if we go to the finals, I'll give you another first-round pick. That's how we really believe we were close. We played Edmonton in the conference finals my first year in Anaheim. So 2005-06, we played Edmonton in the conference final. We didn't sneak up on our Stanley Cup. We were a contender the year before, and we met afterwards and said, what do we need? What's the one piece we need to get us over the top? Because we had the goalie. J.S. Chiguer is a great money goaltender, great playoff goaltender. We had offense. We were tough. That gets Laff and Perry. But we're like, what's the one thing we need? If we get Chris Pronger, we can probably have a Perry. So I said to Kevin, I think you're right. This is why I'm still talking to Kevin. I said, I think you're punching our ticket to the finals, and we'll throw in another first. So it cost us two firsts, Joffrey Lupo, Laddie Smead. We had a parade, so no one can ever argue about whether that was a good trade or not.
Now, we're going to get to the Kevin Lowe thing in a moment, but that first year you were in Anaheim, isn't that when you beat the Flames in the worst Game 7 of all time?
Well, it was a great Game 7.
Yeah, not the way it's remembered here.
Listen, I was on the tail end when Calgary beat Vancouver, when they won the Cup in 89. They beat us in overtime in Game 7. I was on the Canucks staff. So I've been on both ends in that building in those series. So, yeah, that game, it was. I remember, I think it was Francois Beauchemin scored the second goal, and the building, the Saddle Dome, went dead, just dead.
Yeah. And they were so good at home that year. Didn't you? You had an amazing home record. You were a good team.
It's whiny pants, losers. Yeah, yeah. But we were bagged because we pushed so hard to get home ice that come playoff time, it was like there was nothing left in the tank for some reason. I don't know. It's hard to explain.
But. And we were a young team. We had veterans, but we had a lot of young kids too. So that might have been a factor. But I remember it's one of the classiest things I've ever seen in pro sports. By the time I came down in the elevator with my owner, Henry Samueli, Daryl Sutter was in our dressing room going from player to player, congratulating them and wishing them luck. I've never seen that. I've never seen a visiting coach or a coach or GM that just lost a series go in the other room and congratulate each player, shake his head and wish them luck. I've never seen that. I never will again.
Well, he wasn't as nice to us.
Well, it wasn't as nice to me either.
Chatting with Brian Burke here on Sportsnet. Now, we were going to talk about, because right now the thing that's going on in Toronto with Nylander, what are they going to do? Are they going to sign him?
And cap space, maybe all that.
Maybe an offer sheet. And, of course, the thing with lottery picks, teams are kind of loath to potentially give up on those big picks. And, of course, one of the most famous offer sheets of all time involved you and Kevin. Are you guys still not talking?
Oh, no. We mended that fence years ago.
Yeah.
Years ago. He's a good guy. What set me off was that contract, that offer sheet basically changed the economics in our league. It eliminated the second contract. So you used to have an entry level, then a second or bridge deal, and then you got the big dough. And I had to pay Getzlaff and Perry after that contract. What annoyed me the most was that basically they'd overpaid the wrong guy. And they'd overpaid a guy who was not a key player on our team.
Mm-hmm.
And then forced everyone with a guy coming out of entry level to overpay. It basically eliminated the second contract. And I was furious at him. Plus, he didn't call me. Usually when you offer sheet a guy, I've never done it, but the etiquette is when you offer sheet a guy, you call him and say, like, I hate to tell you this, but we got an offer sheet coming in the next hour. And he didn't do that. So I snapped on him, and he snapped back, and we had a good little feud there. It gave you guys something to talk about. But
is there any chance it's going to happen now?
What, an offer sheet?
Yeah, in Toronto or?
Well, in you mean right now for William Nylander? No,
or just ever, because we just don't see them.
Well, here's the reason you don't see them. And everyone thinks, oh, there's a code, there's this and that. There's no code. It's like when Bobby Clark offer sheeted Ryan Kessler in Vancouver. Dave Nonis' quote was, we all know Bobby Clark could kick his grandmother down a flight of steps to win a playoff round. There's no code. There's no, they could care less. The other GMs could care less about Brad Treliving's feelings or the Flames fans or anything else. If there's an opportunity to offer sheet a guy, the reason you don't see them is teams generally keep enough cap room to match them. And they're not going to let a top guy go for the package. The package, in my opinion, one thing they've got to look at in the new CBA is readdressing how many picks there is. If you take a real top guy, it's not enough. The ranges aren't pegged properly. The compensation isn't pegged properly. But the reason you don't see them is because teams with a star player always keep enough room to match, and they are just not going to let the guy walk. So there's no point for a team to go after a guy and get their fans all excited and then have the team match anyway. They've all been matched pretty well, mm-hmm. except for Penner and a couple others. So, but will you see them? Absolutely. You've got a couple teams now with cap room. You've got a couple players that were born in certain places. You've got a couple opportunities where a team is really – there are going to be a couple teams in severe cap trouble that aren't now because they've done such a good job. Winnipeg's got cap trouble. Toronto's got cap trouble. Like, I talk about one aspirin headaches. Toronto's cap issue is about a sixth aspirin headache.
Yeah.
Like, you're talking serious problems here. And that's why they can't get Nylander done. They've got to have this fight to get him at a number that he can still, they can still fit all the pieces in the jigsaw puzzle. And frankly, I don't see how they can do it. Even if they get their number, I don't see how they can do it.
Yeah.
The way Matthews has come out of the gate, his number has already moved significantly since 8 days ago when the season started.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with you. And then Marner's playing well.
Listen, they've got Tavares at 11. Elliot Friedman, who I had the pleasure of working with, he's a great guy. He did a good mathematical analysis, and he said the highest percentage of any recent Cup team was Pittsburgh, and their top four guys ate up 45% of the cap. So using the figures based on what the league has told the teams to expect for a cap next year, it's $84 million, I think. So it works out to basically $38 million is the most you could pay your top four players and have success. Well, they got Tavares at $11 million. So now you're at $27 million for the other three. So they have to have this fight because if you say, okay, why don't they give the other three all $9 million? Well, Auston Matthews ain't taking $9 million. No. And I don't think Mitch Marner's planning on taking $9 million. And Nylander's saying, well, I'm not as good as those two guys, but I'm pretty good. So I don't want to be $5 million below whatever they get. So it's a bit of a headache. But this is what happens. It killed me in Anaheim. You know, after we won the Cup, Scotty Niedermeyer and Teemu Selanne retired, then decided to come back. We were bumping up against the cap. I had to move guys out to fit them in. I couldn't make the math work, and I couldn't make the players I brought in work so we could have any chance of repeating. That's why that team didn't repeat.
Yeah.
So I understand and I empathize what they're going through here. Same thing in Winnipeg. Same thing in Nashville. If you have success and then you have playoff success, you got to pay guys. And everyone's there with their hat out. And when your team has success, everyone's holding their hat out. Like the third pairing defenseman says, well, I'm not going to get the big deal like those guys, but I ain't playing for $1.5 million anymore. I want three. And then all of a sudden, you've got to fight because every sliver of pie you hand out, the size of that sliver affects all the other slivers. So you got to fight on all of these. There's not going to be any, like the Edmonton Oilers, as their team gets better, they're not going to easily sign Connor McDavid the July before he's eligible to sign. They're going to have fist fights with players just like Toronto's having a fist fight with Nylander. They have to do it. They've got to get him into the number that makes sense or they're totally screwed.
How hard is it? And I'm Brent Seabrook. You win three cups with him. He's been an integral piece of your team. You sign him to this big contract and almost knowing
it's an albatross.
It's going to end up as a bit of an albatross. Like, can you not do it or do you have to do it?
I don't know what the answer is. Corey Perry's in the same boat. I don't know what the answer is. You know, those guys, in Brent's case, three cups and just a quality person, just a wonderful human being, really effective player. I don't think he's an albatross yet. I still think he's an effective player. I know they're getting on him in Chicago. Yeah. They don't like the money. But I really respect this player. And I don't say that about all players. Some players I don't respect. I respect the way he's played the game. I still think he's effective. Maybe not worth what they're paying him. But he's not an albatross. An albatross to me is a guy who's contributing nothing and making big dough. He's this guy might be in the overpaid, you know, go over in the supermarket in the overpaid aisle, but still producing. But this is a problem. You have success with guys. The older guys want to get rewarded. You give them a long-term contract, knowing that you're probably buying out the last year of that contract, which gives you a little bit of relief, 33%. But that's a problem. And they wanted to reward Brent Seabrook. Look what he's done there. Look what he's accomplished there. But it's going to be a problem as he gets older. Because he's still got, what, 3 years after this year?
Five
after this year. So then it's going to be an albatross.
Yeah.
But he's still producing to me.
And they haven't, like, what's the math? They haven't won a cup since the Taves and Kane extensions kicked in?
I just mean that...
No, I know what you mean.
It's how do you say no to these guys that have done so much? I mean, Chicago's a great example of such a downtrodden franchise for so long. You get these guys in, they ramp up the whole... I mean, you used to go into Chicago on Sunday afternoons, there'd be 5,000 people there. There's no way that happens now. But they turn. I mean, they don't turn.
And July 1st came 2 weeks after a parade.
Yes. Like, I don't know how, as a GM, you don't pay the guy, but I wonder if you're a great GM and you have the stones, if you don't pay them, you're actually better off in the long run.
Well, give me an example. I think what you do is it's the term that kills you on these contracts. It's not the cash, it's the term. If Brent Seabrook had, as I just said, 3 years left, we'd be like, okay, they maybe have to eat the last year. But he's still an effective player. But if you're talking, it's a term. So I think what Vegas did with Max Pacioretty is instructive. He wanted 6-6 or 6-7. And they said, no, we're only going 4, but we'll pay up. We'll pay $7 million a year for 4 years. And so, and same thing with Reeves. They signed him to a 2-year deal. They gave him what Calgary offered him on a 3-year deal, but he had to take it in 2 years. So they want to avoid the term. So what you might do there, believe it or not, and you couldn't in Chicago because of the other good players they had, you might actually overpay that guy salary wise and take a year or 2 years off the term.
Yeah. And it used to be the other way. You'd go long term to get that cap hit number down.
Yep. So it's I'm with Rhett. It's pretty hard to argue that Brent Seabrook's overpaid when it used to be a ghost town. The games would be half empty, the games weren't televised. Those guys came in and rejuvenated the franchise. You can't get a ticket now. So it's pretty hard to say he's an albatross, even in the last 2-3 years of that, when he truly will be an albatross. It's still pretty hard to see that he didn't build the foundation here, folks. So guess what? He's still getting paid.
Can I ask one more?
Hey,
we got to let you go.
No.
It might be a stretch, but is there any fear that these states with the lower tax bracket are going to benefit hugely? I mean you look at it, the Pacioretty thing and how the math turned out, playing in Vegas for less, and like the money's so big now that those numbers really add up. Is there a fear that as a GM in Calgary, I can't compete with a GM in Vegas?
You're kidding, right?
Well,
do you think this is new?
Well, no, I guess.
Because, the math on that one
seems
was...
seems more obvious.
He took 7 in Vegas. It would have basically been a hair under 10 in Montreal.
Stamkos took 8.5 in Tampa. There's no state income tax in Florida. And it was the equivalent after tax. And not just the state tax thing, the differential on federal rates, too. The Canadian teams are at a supreme disadvantage, tax-wise. Like, talk to guys who play in Montreal, what their take-home is. Mm-hmm. So they pay, I think it's 57%, 56% is the top marginal rate. So they end up with, 46%. Say it's 54, right? Then they pay whatever, they pay their agent, they pay the escrow. Some of them end up with about 30%, 35% of their paycheck. And so you compare that to some of the U.S. jurisdictions, and then you throw in the states like Texas, Florida, Nevada, that do not have a state income tax, you're talking about a material difference on a big contract, on a Pacioretty contract. So, yes, it's already the tax differential between the two countries is already a problem, but it's exacerbated and greatly, greatly exacerbated by the states that have no state income tax. Mm-hmm. Now, there are other taxes. So you understand, if you live in Florida, your property taxes are brutal. So the state still gets paid. But if you don't buy a place, You don't pay those property taxes. So it's a big differential. I was talking to an agent the other day, and he said on Max's deal, Max Pacioretty, and I'll get the math wrong, I think the state income tax component alone, they figure it's worth $500,000 to $600,000 a year. And I'm quoting this agent. I don't know if that's true.
Well, I'm buddies with Brian Campbell, and I'm pretty sure that when he went from Chicago to Florida, he saved $1 million in tax.
Yeah. So it's a big problem. So I'm not mocking your question, but this is we GMs and with Canadian teams have been dealing with this for 20 years.
Good stuff, Brian. Really appreciate your time. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again on Thursday.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.